Alrighty. Hey, gang. Welcome back, you guys. Episode 98 of Zero Carb Journal. I'm Matt, as always. Good morning, you guys. Nice to see ya. How you doing? Did you have a good week? Make some progress? Stay the course? I hope so. I had a great week, you guys. It was really good. Made a lot of progress. Kept my head down. Worked hard. So here we are. Good morning. Sunday morning. It's early-ish. It's just a little after 7. It's 32 out there, and you can see behind me maybe a little blurry, it looks like, but it's going to be a beautiful sunny day, cold and clear. We just finally broke our rain and wind stretch that we had going for most of the fall here, and we're now into, looks like, a couple weeks of nice weather, so I'm real excited about that. I think that means the rest of the country's probably East Coast is seeing horrible weather, I think, usually is how that goes. But anyways, hope you guys are doing good. Good morning. So, let's see. This week, what a week. So I finally got started on my boat full-time. It's, of course, going to be late, like I talked about last week. So I've been working hard. I put in 40 hours this week, which is a lot for me. Crawling around in those boats. So yeah, I'm getting in there at about 7 in the morning and going straight through, no breaks, one meal a day. It's been interesting the way that sort of just naturally happens here on Zero Carb. I haven't really been trying, but I do. I get up and work out and go in there, and then I just end up staying. I brought food the first couple days, but I didn't eat it. So I end up just staying and pushing through the day and then eating once a day at the end of the day. And just like I discovered last time, that ends up leaving me a little short on energy by the end of the week. And so I end up spending the weekend usually just eating and sleeping and trying to get caught up, which is kind of enjoyable for the most part, typically. So it's been a good week. So that's all I've been doing. I've just been buckled down, barely time to take care of the regular stuff, regular life stuff around that. But it's been good. It does wear me out. I am exhausted, by the end of the day. And then by the end of the week, I'm just totally wiped out. I just need to pretty much lay around all weekend. So, but it's been good. It's been great to hang out with the guys. It's been great to, feel valued again. I know that I make a big difference when I go do these things. Feel like I'm solving a lot of problems and pushing the project forward in ways that it wouldn't go if I wasn't there. So it's all real rewarding. But that coming home and eating once a day and being real tired is kind of hard on me. And that brings me to next point, which is this week has been great, but I did have a sick night on Friday. When I got to the end of my week, I got home and I must have just ate more than I ate before. I don't know, it didn't seem like I really ate that much, you guys, to be honest. But sure enough, 6 hours later, there I was, being woken up by burning in my guts and sweating and horrible pain. And, you know, I think that you can hear my guts are still rumbling because I'm still dealing with it. I think that I am probably, I think Dean maybe said, don't be a tough guy, tell the doctor how bad it's been. Or Robin, maybe you said that. But I think maybe that's just in my nature to sort of downplay it. Because I was recognizing while I was having this event this weekend that that I was miserable. I mean, I'm like whimpering in pain, you know, for hours all night. And then when it's past, I usually am like, ah, it's no big deal. I had a great week. But yeah, that's probably not that great, is it? So it was pretty bad. I was really sick Friday night, and I was so sick that I woke up Saturday morning. I had vomited, I think, all the food that I ate out. So I woke up Saturday morning, yesterday morning, starving. My stomach really hurting, and I ate a little more. Sometimes that seems to just sort of calm everything down, but it didn't. And so I spent yesterday pretty much sick as well, whimpering in pain. And now it's Sunday, and I didn't eat anymore since I've probably been about 24 hours since I ate. And yeah, I had a pretty rough day yesterday and not the best night last night. Feeling pretty okay right now. My stomach's not settled and it's sore, but I feel okay. So I'm getting more motivated to try and not experience that anymore. And tomorrow is my doctor's appointment. So that's kind of exciting to sort of be coming in fresh on this event and sort of to be reminded of how miserable it is. So that might make some of you happy to know that I'm motivated in that way. And I would like to thank you very much, Robin and Joan. Thank you for sharing your experience that you feel so much better after having your gallbladder removed. I am hopeful that maybe there's some relief for me there. So I'm looking forward to seeing my doctor tomorrow. I'm sure he'll be responsive to ultrasound, and I'm going to see about going down that road. So thank you guys for that. And yeah, so there was this week. It's been a great week, except for a sick weekend. I'm so used to it, it doesn't really seem like it's that big a deal, but I guess it'd be better to not have it. So there's that. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to this coming week. So I'm going to spend the day today just kind of resting up, doing laundry and watching football and just puttering around. And then tomorrow I'm going in the morning to the doctor and hopefully get things kicked off there and heading in a new direction. And then a few more weeks of full-time work, as much as I can handle, probably. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to this next few weeks, hopefully making some progress in a lot of ways. So there's that. And that brings me to just sort of a thought I had, one of my zero carb thoughts that I had this week that I wanted to talk about. You know, I was reading, I was reading people talking about coming to this way of eating and people kicking it around. And, you know, you still get, you often get people who are really unconvinced or really on the fence or whatever until they feel, what I'm trying to say is some people feel, I'm not sure how to say it, science, they want studies, you know what I'm saying, people want studies, people don't believe stuff without solid studies. It's funny to me because I believe that nutritional science is, quite a joke at this point, mostly a farce. And when you read those studies, I mean, there are good studies that do produce results that I think are something you can at least, observe and get guidance from. But for the most part, I read studies and I don't give them much credence in the nutritional world because they are often just association or small biased groups or biased researchers or, you know, any of the number of things that make them less valid. So, you know, but a lot of folks are so, I don't know how you say it, in our society, our paradigm, they're so trained, I guess, to glean all of their knowledge from those studies, and if there aren't studies, it's not real, no matter what they can observe. I'm not saying it very well. Good morning. It's early. You guys know what I mean, though, and there's many folks who just really want to see science, what they consider science, to, you know, modern Western studies to verify, which, you know, so I guess I can go a little deeper in that. I think that's ridiculous because for me, it's much more convincing to observe the long history of humankind and observe the people that I can observe in my own firsthand experience, as well as reading what others have observed over time. And you know, to me, the pattern's very clear about what is healthy and what is our traditional healthy diets and what isn't. It's pretty easy to see that what we eat now, for the most part, aren't things or ways that we've eaten in the past. So at any rate, what I'm trying to say is that in reading about these folks who are really looking for studies, you know, I started thinking about why there aren't studies. We know why there aren't studies in the last 20 or 30 years. It's because of, there's a lot of association type studies, but you know, you can't do randomized trials or things like that on people with their diet in the modern world, because it's unethical, apparently. Now, I'm totally, by the way, just talking about things I've read and think I understand, so I could be totally wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, my understanding is that we don't have a lot of studies in the last few decades due to the changing and modernizing of all of our ethics and things like that, because it's just not feasible to do double-blind tests and not tell people what they're eating and lie to them about what they're eating and those kinds of things to try and get those randomized trials and double-blind tests and things like that. but then you go back, you know, you go back in history and you go, well, why weren't there more studies back in the beginning of our Western medical study culture, which really is only 150 years old or something, it would seem, you know, if you go back and learn about when we figured out the beginnings of digestion is only, you know, 150 years ago or so. So it's not a long history. And so I was wondering, you know, why there had never been all meat really as considered in our culture, in the Western European-based culture, why that had never been considered as a viable way of eating and one that was worth looking into. There's, you know, a few books, Blake Donaldson, Strong Medicine from back around, you know, quite a while ago, and Stephenson, Fat of the Land around the turn of the last century. And, you know, there were people who tried to alert society that this was stuff to look into. I think Weston Price probably falls in that category. But, you know, for whatever reason, those were never pursued, and they were usually just poo-pooed by the general scientific community. And I have to venture my theory here on why that is, and I was sort of looking back and trying to say, well, you know, all of these indigenous peoples that we run into in various points in history have always been impressive to the European man, you know, whether it was Carl Linnaeus in 1634 running into the Sami peoples of northern Finland, the reindeer hunters. And in those days, they only ate meat. They ate no carbohydrates. The government brought them potatoes and things like that in the early 1900s and wrecked their health, of course. But up until that point, and especially in the 1600s when Carl Linnaeus ran into them, they were pure carnivores, from what I understand. I mean, I'm sure there's some small exceptions with some berries and lichens and whatever, lichens, whatever. But for the most part, carnivore. And, you know, he was completely impressed by their physical fitness and agility and, you know, how they aged and physical stature, all of the normal things that happen when Europeans run into indigenous carnivorous tribes. And that happened again with the Inuit. Any of the explorers running into them were like, wow, they're 6'4" and they can go all day and they're strong and, you know, happy, the laughing people as they were known. The Sioux and the Métis tribes of the northern plains, whether it was the Canadian or on the American side, you know, the pioneers would run into them and be like, gosh, they're a foot taller than us and they're beautiful specimens and they're strong and healthy and their teeth are great. And, you know, you read the journals and these are all things that they talk about. Lewis and Clark, had I talked about last week, same thing. They'd go spend a bunch of time with those tribes, spend, you know, weeks with them eating only buffalo and feel great, and then they'd go over the mountains and get to the other tribes and eat tubers, and they'd all get sick and suffer from stomach pains, and on and on and on, you know. So as whenever we sort of ran into these folks, we'd go, damn, look at how healthy they are, look at how fit they are. And there'd be a few astute observers who would say, well, maybe that's because of what they're eating. Carl Linnaeus definitely said that. He said, in the Dutch plains we grow strong and large and then fat and sick. And I think it's the bread. And that was in 1634. And he wrote that in relation to what he had seen in the Sami people who were eating only reindeer, who were 60 years old and could put their feet behind their necks and were spry and jumping around. So he recognized that difference and he observed it. You know, I think most of the people just sort of didn't really recognize it. You hear about Stephenson's group and he would have to, you know, be very strict about telling his men they couldn't eat pilot bread or carbohydrates or plant-based foods, and he had to really crack the whip on that. So the point is that there was a few people who would observe that and try and make that point, but whenever they got back to society, it would be met with much resistance and never studied. And so, you know, going back to why we don't have studies, I think it's really simple and clear. I think it's directly attributed to, I'm not sure what the right word is, I'll use racism, but you know what I mean, the colonial attitude of the late 1800s and the early 1900s, when the colonists would go, when the, you know, imperialists, I suppose, would go you know, conquering these new lands, and rather than admit that there was anything of value to be gained from the indigenous peoples, they would just say, oh, they're savages, and, you know, bend them to our mold. And there, you know, they would not be able to admit that there was anything of value to be learned from them, and that obviously they were savages who didn't know how to eat, and so we must give them potatoes and turnips and flour in the case of the Inuit, and on and on and on, flour in the case of the Native Americans too. And that's one of the things, you know, that actually one of the things that brought me to this realization was going past a festival here at one of our local reservations and seeing the fry bread signs and being like, oh yeah, that's the food of their oppressors that they've adopted and made their own. But at the same time, it's really illustrative of how strongly we influence their cultures and how little theirs really were allowed to influence our view of the world and view of science. So anyways, that's just a little aside, but I found it pretty interesting kind of when I looked back in history. I was like, why, you know, everyone who eats this way seems to perform better. And that's, I believe that. I haven't seen anybody give this an honest try and not go, wow, thank you. Now, I have had one friend try it, and he didn't stick with it, but he told me it was just because of the social things. He's just one of those resilient people who he's able to, you know, he's flexible, and he's able to and, you know, have different modes of eating and still feel relatively good. Now, he did tell me he learned a ton, and he doesn't eat a lot of the things that he used to eat prior to ZC because he recognized the effects they have on his body. But, and I couldn't list what he does eat and doesn't eat. And he's a much younger man than I am. I do believe that makes a difference. I think our metabolisms, just like Carl Linnaeus said in 1634, we grow strong and large when we're young. I think that when we're young, we can process some of that stuff better. So at any rate, he's doing great. But the point of that was everyone who's tried it has learned a ton and for the most part has felt exponentially better, him included. He told me he's making compromises going back and forth to be more social and to do things he enjoys, and it's not, you know, terribly detrimental to him. So anyways, just find that interesting that despite how this way of eating performs for basically everybody, there still has never been a strong, until recently, you know, there's never been a strong consensus that this might be something that's worth looking into. And I do. I think that it just goes back to our arrogance in the turn of the last century. With regards to the ideas that there was nothing of value to be gleaned from those indigenous folks. It's so maddening. It drives me crazy. And, you know, so I'm going to go today and go ride bikes for a little bit with one of my buddies down on the reservation, and he's a tribal member, and we've talked about it in the past. You know, I told him, I said, I don't think he's kind of, all of his people are big and round locally here and bloated. And he's not too bad, but he has told me he's been struggling with feeling bloated and getting bigger. And I said, I don't think your folks were eating the way, you know, I don't think you guys have been eating this way for a very long time. I mean, 100 years. Actually, that's not true. They've had fry bread since like the 1500s or so when the Spanish first started. The first potatoes, the Ozette potatoes, were brought up here to the Northwest coast by the Spaniards from South America in like the 1500s. So they've got 500 years of carbohydrate inundation due to Europeans. But prior to that, you know, it was clams and oysters and salmon and elk and occasional tubers. As we know from the history, they would burn out the Camas Plains here and grow Camas tubers, but I really don't believe that that was a significant part of the diet in terms of caloric, you know, intake year-round on a daily basis. I could be wrong, but I don't believe so. They had so much animal food. They had such an abundance of animal foods. It would have been incredibly easy to live here. I always think on that when I visit my folks down on the oyster farm, because you just wander down to the water when you're hungry and pick up, you know, a few oysters off the beach without doing any work, and then underneath those are the clams, and the right time of year right there are the salmon if you just put a net 6 feet out into the off the shore. So, you know, and they had a real easy time. I know they did eat berries and things like that, but I just, again, I just don't feel like it could have been a significant caloric, you know, significant amount of their caloric intake. Anyways, that's simply an aside. Oh, there goes my light. So, that's just something I've been thinking about how did we get here and why is there no, science, and why, you know, why was there no studies, and you know, there's just a huge void of information, right? With the exception of these few outlier publications like Stephenson's Fatherland or Donaldson's Strong Medicine, or you know, those few little glimpses of people who saw more than their peers and weren't afraid to say so. So, anyways, I just find that really fascinating. So, I don't know if you can see my face. You probably can still. You can probably see maybe even better, but I think that's probably enough of me rambling about my crazy thoughts for now. I one more thing, just a little tidbit. I did make a zero-carb purchase these last couple weeks that I'm excited about. I bought a meat slicer, you guys, and as you guys know, I love my, well, we talked about beef bacon a couple weeks ago, and I've been enjoying pork belly. And so I did. I bought a good meat slicer, and I used it for the first time day before yesterday. And it's really going to change my life, you guys. I'm really excited. So I've been having a lot of ribeye bacon these last few days. Probably what made me sick, all that fat. But it's been a lot of fun. So I'll probably show you guys some more of that in the future. But highly recommended. Well, although most of you probably don't need it because you don't probably eat as much beef bacon as I do. But yeah, that's been fun. So anyways, so I'm going to dig in this week. I'm going to dig in my doctor appointment. I'm going to see if I can make some progress and do some more diagnostic stuff and figure out a little more about what's going on with me. So I'm really looking forward to that. Looking forward to progress, as always. And then as well, I'm just looking forward to seeing how hard I can go at work. It's been fun challenging myself. Staying there for 8 hours is hard for me, I'm not going to lie. I'm crawling around in the metal. My knees are actually like bloody right now. I got big scabs from crawling around, and it's tough. And so I've been pushing hard. I'm going to get in there. It's not going to go too much longer because that boat has to be delivered. So I'm going to make hay while the sun shines. And yeah, I'm looking forward to a good week of progress, so I can't wait to come back next week and tell you guys what I find. My doctor, hopefully, well, we'll see. I don't know how long it takes to get an ultrasound, but maybe I'll have some progress immediately to share with you. But I can't thank you guys enough. Thank you so much for all of your support and comments. You guys are making a huge difference in my life, just helping, giving me guidance and bouncing ideas off of me from, you know, the things that we talk about. So thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. So I'll let you know how it goes when we check in next week. And that's going to be episode 99. Can you believe that? Almost 100 of these. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll stop at 2 years? Yeah, I don't know. Probably not, I guess. As long as I'm still picking away at progress, I will probably keep sharing. So, anyways, that's enough for now. I guess I need to charge my battery. And literally and figuratively. So, hope you guys do the same. Charge up. Have a great week, you guys. Stay the course. Make some progress. And I'll check in with you next week. And we'll see what happens with the doctor. All right, you guys. Have a great day. Talk to you soon. Thank you. See ya.